Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'll read the chapter summary. The activities of Lord Rishabhadev. So, this chapter tells how Lord Rishabhadev left his body. He was not attached to his body even when it was burnt up in a forest fire. When the seed of fruit of activity is burned by the fire of knowledge, the spiritual properties and mystic powers are automatically manifest, yet bhakti yoga is not affected by these mystic powers. An ordinary yogi is captivated by mystic powers and his progress checked. Therefore, a perfect yogi does not welcome them because the mind is restless and undependable. It must always remain under control. Even the mind of an advanced yogi, Shovari, created such a disturbance that he lost his yogic mystic powers. Due to a restless mind, even a very advanced yogi can fall down. The mind is so restless that it induces even a perfect yogi to be controlled by the senses. Therefore, Lord Rishabhadeva, for the instruction of all yogis, show the process of quitting the body. While traveling in South India, through the provinces of Karnataka, Konka, Vinka, and Kutaka, Lord Rishabhadeva arrived in the neighborhood of Guttakachala. Suddenly there was a forest fire that burned the forest and Lord Rishabhadeva's body to ashes. The pastimes of Lord Rishabhadeva as a liberated soul were known by the king of Konka, Vinka, and Kutaka. This king's name was Arhat. He later became captivated by the illusory energy, and in this condition he set forth the basic principles of Jainism. Lord Rishabhadeva set forth the principles of religion that can free one from material bondage, and he put an end to all kinds of atheistic activities. On this earth, the place known as Bharatavarsha was a very pious land because the Supreme Lord appeared there when he wanted to incarnate. Lord Rishabhadeva neglected all the mystic powers for which the so-called yogis hanker. Because of the beauty of devotional service, devotees are not at all interested in so-called mystic power. The master of all yogic power, Lord Krishna, can exhibit all powers on behalf of his devotee. Devotional service is more valuable than yogic mystic powers. Devotees who are sometimes misled aspire for liberation and mystic powers. The Supreme Lord gives these devotees whatever they desire, but they cannot attain the most important function of devotional service. Devotional service to the Lord is guaranteed for those who do not desire liberation and mystic power. So, all right, so we'll read the first text. The first text, again, is in prose rather than poetry, so I'm just going to read that and we'll go on to the word-by-word synonyms. So, text one, Rajuvacha nanunam bhagava Atma Ramanam Yoga Samirita Gyanava Bharjata Karma Bhijanam Aishvaryani Punak Kleshadani Bhavitam Arhanti Yatrichayo Pagatani. So you can repeat. Raja Uvacha. King Parikshit inquired. Not. Noonam. Indeed. Bhagavaha. O most powerful Shukadeva Goswami. Atmaramanam. A pure devotee is simply engaged in devotional service. Yoga Samirita. Achieved by practice of yoga. Jnana. By knowledge. Avabharajita. Burned. Karma Bijanam. Of those whose seeds of fruit of activity. Aishwaryani. The mystic powers. Punaha. Again. Kleshadani. Sources of distress. Bhavatum. To become. Arhanti. Are able. Yadrichya. Automatically. Upagatani. Achieved. Translation. King Parikshit asked Shukadeva Goswami, "My dear Lord, for those who are completely pure in heart, knowledge is attained by the practice of bhakti yoga and attachment for fruit of activity is completely burned to ashes. For such people, the powers of mystic yoga automatically arise. They do not cause distress. Why then did Rishabhadeva neglect them?" So you can repeat. King Parikshit asked Shukadeva Goswami, "My dear Lord, for those who are completely pure in heart, knowledge is attained by the practice of bhakti yoga. An attachment for fruit of activity is completely burned to ashes. For such people, the powers of mystic yoga automatically arise. They do not cause distress. Why then did Rishabhadeva neglect them?" And so purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada. A pure devotee is constantly engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whatever is necessary for the discharge of devotional service is automatically attained, although it may appear to be the result of mystic yoga power. Sometimes a yogi displays a little yogic power by manufacturing gold. A little quantity of gold captivates foolish people, and thus the yogi gets many followers who are willing to accept such a tiny person as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a yogi may also advertise himself as Bhagavan. However, a devotee does not have to exhibit such magical wonders. Without practicing the mystic yogic process, he achieves even greater opulence all over the world. Under the circumstances, Lord Rishabhadeva refused to manifest mystic yogic perfections. And Maharaja Parikshit asked why he did not accept them, since, for a devotee, they are not at all disturbing. A devotee is never distressed or satisfied in material opulence. His concern is how to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If by the grace of the Supreme Lord, a devotee achieves extraordinary opulence, he utilizes the opportunity for the Lord's service. He is not disturbed by the opulence. So, Om Gana Tipananda Shah, Gananjana Shalakaya, Chakshur Meritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So you very seldom see devotees utilize their mystic powers, even though, as Srila Prabhupada and Krishna explained, they have all these mystic powers. The mystic powers, generally there's Ashta Siddhis. There's eight mystic powers, primary ones, and there's also secondary ones. These are described later on in the Bhagavatam, such as the Anima Siddhi, the Lagima Siddhi. In other words, you can make yourself very small or very heavy. You can make yourself... You can do Prapti Siddhi, where you can reach out and make a withdrawal from the bank without using your card or your passbook. Of course, they used to have passbooks in the bank. I haven't seen that in a long time, isn't it? Like your savings account passbook. You can just reach out and take whatever you want. Like get a mango from somewhere, or a banana, or pakora, or whatever. Ladies would like that. They can get all their Christmas gifts. They reach out into what, Neiman Marcus? That's where your mother used to work. And then get all this expensive stuff. So, anyway, so it to me, it sounds very attractive, I have to be honest. You know, I can't lie and say that it's not attractive. You know, I was thinking I could build the temple real quickly, just reach out and get a little money or whatever we needed. But generally, you don't see the devotees using it. There may be some exceptions. But I was thinking of the case of Maharaj Ambarish. Maharaj Ambarish was threatened by Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni pulled out one of his hairs. And because he was very angry at Maharaj Ambarish, because he thought that Maharaj Ambarish had offended him. Because Maharaj Ambarish, in order to keep the Ekadasi Vrata and breaking the Ekadasi on the Dwadasi at a certain time, he drank a little water. He didn't take any food. But that was just when Durvasa Muni was expecting to eat before Maharaj Ambarish. Actually, it's a rule of Vedic etiquette that when your guests come, you don't eat before the guests. You eat after the guests have finished. Anyway, that's the Vedic etiquette. So Durvasa Muni, having a natural bad temper, of course, he is a partial expansion of Lord Shiva, so we're not going to criticize him, but this is just the way he is. He has a bad temper, Durvas. And so he pulled out his hair and created a demon. And Maharaj Ambarish, he could have used his mystic powers to just sort of get rid of that demon. But he didn't. He just sat down and chanted his rounds, basically, and prayed to Krishna. And guess what? The Sudarshan Chakra came and protected Maharaj Ambarish. It's interesting. Or, in other words, so he didn't use those powers to protect himself. No, I'm not saying that we shouldn't use our intelligence to protect ourselves. You know, we should wear a seatbelt and everything like that. But there's a reason for not using those powers, and I'll explain in a few minutes. Another example is that you have Parikshit Maharaj. He was cursed by the Brahmin son. He was cursed by Sringi. And he was cursed because he put a snake around Sringi's father's neck, you know, a dead snake. And Sringi was pretty upset, not being a qualified Brahmin. He was Brahma Bandhu. That means a friend or a relative of a Brahmin. He cursed Parikshit Maharaj to die in 7 days by the bite of the snake. Now, Parikshit Maharaj had the power to counteract that. But he didn't use that power to counteract it. Interesting, isn't it? So you see many, many, many examples of devotees not using the powers when, you know, you and I probably would have used the powers, but they didn't use it. So one can ask the question, you know, why don't they use these powers? Because they're pure devotees. I mean, pure devotee, as we know, what is it? Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagi Muchute Anashataksha Vishyan Yataram Upayunjata Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagi Muchute. That a devotee is engaged in something called Yukta Vairagya. In other words, Vairagya means without passion. And sometimes it's translated as renunciation or detachment. Vairagya, you know, Raj, which means passion. Just like a king is called Maharaj, great passionate one. A sannyasi is also in Kali Yuga is called big passion. Maharaj. So anyway, so it's not a traditional sannyasi name. As we've mentioned many times before, a traditional sannyasi would be like Swami or something like that. But Maharaj is actually something. Anyway, just like you hear the Maharaj of Jaipur or the Maharaj of this place or that place, right? So it's actually a king's title, because a king is naturally in the mode of passion, being a kshatriya, whereas a sannyasi is supposed to be in the mode of goodness, transcendental goodness. And very rarely do you have Lord Chaitanya called Chaitanya Maharaj. I haven't heard that, have you? You know, generally it's like Maharaj Ambarish, Maharaj Parikshit. Anyway, getting back to the point. So, Vairagya. And also Lord Chaitanya comes to teach Vairagya. What is it? Vairagya Vijja Nija Bhakti Yoga Shiksharta Eka Purusha Parana Sri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dari Kripam Buddhir Yastvam Aham Parbhajye. This is Very nice verse that was written by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He actually wrote it like 100 verses in praise of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you've come to teach renunciation, vairagya, vidya, and to give knowledge about devotional service, the renunciation of those things which are not favorable for devotional service. So getting back to the point, yukta vairagya muchate. So yukta, we're very much interested in this yukta vairagya. Yukta vairagya means to connect yukta, yuj, like yoga. Like yoga means to connect. It's the root means the same thing, to connect. Like people think the word yoga means exercises, but it means to connect with Krishna, not simply to do some ridiculous exercises. Unless you're getting paid for it, then it's all right. So, it's like I have one expert disciple, and he does so many exercises, and he thousands exercises, and he becomes very wealthy by doing that. So that's all right. It's like what do they call it? The Cirque du Soleil. Cirque du Soleil for a spiritualist. So, I don't know if you know what the Cirque du Soleil is. You don't need to know, and I'm not going to tell you. It's actually a bunch of people who do like acrobatics on the stage to music, and it's really popular. Anyway, so yukta vairagya means the renunciation. That's what we've been taught since the beginning of the movement. I mean, sometimes people would criticize Prabhupada. Oh, you're using a typewriter, or you're using a microphone. I mean, Prabhupada was so expert in yukta vairagya. I mean, sometimes he freaked devotees out and freaked people out. One time Prabhupada was giving a lecture and the microphone wouldn't stay on the stand. And Prabhupada said to one of the devotees, to Mount Krishnamars, take your Brahman thread off. Because they couldn't find any other rope or anything like that. So take your Brahman thread off and just tie the microphone down. You know, so it stays on the stand. I mean, that's the epitome of yukta vairagya. Because, I mean, the Brahmins, the ritualistic Brahmanas in the audience were just like, huh? A Brahman thread? I mean, it's just so sacred. You're supposed to wrap it around your ear when you go to the bathroom so it doesn't get, you know, around your right ear so it doesn't get contaminated. And it's called the sacred thread. Because it's a sacred thread. Anyway, and so that's really yukta vairagya there. So so Prabhupada did all these things to make people Krishna conscious. You know, he probably used modern technology, so many things. And many times his godbrothers and other people would criticize Prabhupada for that. But that was Lord Chaitanya's teaching, yukta vairagya, Rupa Goswami's teaching. Instead of the opposite of yukta vairagya is called phalgu vairagya. Phalgu, actually, it also refers to it like a river. In India, the Phalgu River, you know, false river, that appears not to be a river because it's just the river bed, but you put your finger down and the water's flowing just underneath the surface. So phalgu vairagya means to give up something that could be used for Krishna. And thinking one's a great renunciate because he's giving up something that can be used in Krishna's service. And that Prabhupada told an interesting story in that regard. He said, like, if you find money on the street, and I think everybody's heard this, or find someone's wallet on the street, the phalgu vairagya, false renunciation, would be to say, I renounce this money. But it was not yours to begin with. See, that's the whole principle of yukta vairagya, is that everything belongs to Krishna. Isha vashamidam sarvam. I mean, that's really the principle of yukta vairagya. Everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Isha vash, you know, this is this Upanishad. Idam sarvam yakancha jagatam jagat tena jaktena punjata magritha kashasvidhanam. Everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and everything is meant to be used for him. And people are given a quota. What does that mean, a quota? I mean, we have a certain amount of opulence. We have a certain amount of intelligence. We have a certain amount of skills. Sometimes we get envious of someone who has more skills, more intelligence, more beauty than us. Ladies, sometimes they do that. Sometimes I see, like, Rita Nandamars is very intelligent. So why wasn't I born with a brain like that? Or I see Ananda, who can draw very nicely, you know, pictures. And I said, why wasn't I born with those skills? When I draw something, that basically the psychiatrists want to take me away. They think I have psychological problems because I can't even draw a straight line without a ruler. With a ruler, I can do it. So everybody has their particular skills. Isn't it? You know, I know how to fix bicycles if the chain falls off. You know, you may not know how to do that. So I was wrestling with my bicycle the other day to do that. But anyway, so I have, mechanical skills. Mechanical skills, philosophical skills, whatever skills. Musical skills, you know, some people are musical. Other people can't keep a tune. It's true. I heard it. Daily. They can't keep a tune or keep the rhythm, you know. It's just like they're always off beat. So, but there's different skills. And everybody is given, not just skills, I said money, opulence, position. And sometimes we get envious of them for having those things, right? So why not me? Why is Bill Gates have all that money? Why not me? But we see that Krishna gives us these things as our quota, and he gives us things that are not really going to bewilder us too. Like I was saying, I'll give my own personal example. Like one time, one of my relatives passed away, and I was thinking I'm going to get a big inheritance, really big inheritance. So I was on the plane on the way to the funeral, and I was thinking, oh, when I get this money, then, you know, I'll do things for Krishna. I wasn't thinking, you know, I'll get a Mercedes or anything. But then people will listen to me more. Now they'll respect me like they respect Ambarish. Not Ambarish in the Bhagavatam, you know. Because I was thinking, Ambarish, when he comes to Mayapur, he gets elephants to come out, and they play the siren and everything like that. They do. It's true. I see that. And he rides in a Mercedes from Calcutta to Mayapur, and I just ride in one of these old ambassadors. I don't know if you know what an ambassador is. It's an old car in India. So I was planning like that. And then, and then Krishna didn't do it. That Krishna. So, that rascal. So, he didn't do it, but it was probably the best thing for me because he didn't do it. You understand? So, anyway, so yukta vairagya muchate. So Prabhupada said, you know, we find someone's wallet on the ground or someone's money and we say, you know, I renounce it. It was never yours to renounce. It always belonged to Krishna. Ishubhasha midam sarvam. And then if you take it, you're a thief. And if you try to find the rightful owner, then you're an honest person and you'll probably get a reward anyway, which is kind of nice. Using that particular metaphor, that if we use everything in Krishna's service, we'll get a reward, and that reward is pure devotional service. And that reward is so great. I mean, pure devotional service is so great, it's like Krishna said to the gopis, that I can have nothing to reward you. You know, your own service is actually will have to be a reward, your own devotional service, your own purity. And not only to the gopis, Krishna said that to other Lord Chaitanya said it to many of his associates too, that your own devotion will have to be the reward for your service. So anyway, so that's yukta vairagya. Why doesn't a devotee use mystic powers? I mean, really be effective. It's better than using a PowerPoint to present Krishna consciousness. You know, we're using computers, which are sort of the Kali Yuga mystic powers. Isn't it? You know, like mystic powers, you can communicate with people anywhere in the world. Okay, so now we have the internet. We have, you know, whatever, Mayapur TV. This is the Kali Yuga excuse for mystic powers. Oh, we have airplanes to fly in the sky, whereas previously with the Lagima city, you could just fly. What was that song? Fly Me to the Moon. Anyway, so in the old days, isn't it? Anyway, some romantic song. So you used to be able to fly to anywhere you want, or you can just enter, like we heard the other day, that one can enter the body of someone else with mystic powers. Pretty interesting. Just like Shankaracharya, he was having this whole argument, Sripad Shankaracharya, he was having this whole argument with a lady about, you know, what romantic affairs were. And he had no experience of it. He was thinking, you know, he couldn't argue on the basis of realization. It was just theoretical. So what he did is he used his mystic powers. Of course, Shankaracharya is Lord Shiva. I understand that. But just showing you what mystic powers could do as far as entering others' bodies. He entered the body of a king that just had died. So the king just died. He entered the body, then the king stood up again. He said, here I am again. And then the king engaged in whatever kingly, you know, sense gratification the kings engage in, which is quite opulent. And Shankaracharya experienced that just for a little while. It's not that he was really into it. And then he just left the king's body again. The king dropped dead, you know, right in the middle of holding hands with his wife. And then Shankaracharya was able to defeat this lady because he had that knowledge. So anyway, so these mystic powers. So, you know, it'd be really useful in Krishna consciousness to be able to use these to preach Krishna. Well, the reason devotees don't do it is because even if they're pure devotees are afraid of illusion. Whereas neophytes are not afraid of illusion. Like Prabhupada said, the problem with you boys and girls, Western boys and girls, you're not afraid of Maya. You know, like Prabhupada also said, my disciples, they'll eat any damn thing. That means they'll eat not just anything, but wherever it comes from, anywhere it comes, as long as it doesn't move. You know, they're vegetarians, of course, but they'll eat, you know, like you see devotees eating potato chips or sometimes the pizza, you know, what is it called? Pizza Hut truck pulls up in front of the devotees' houses, right? Do you? I know, because sometimes they come to my house by accident. What they used to. Anyway, so it's true. Have you seen, I have a pizza for Krishna Das. Now, I'm not saying that's not the actual name, you know, or Radharani Dasi. And I said, well, she lives down the block. So, because people are not enough afraid of this illusion, you know, and great stalwarts like Grandfather Bhishma, Dronacharya, and others, they actually became contaminated and lost their devotional stature, even though Grandfather Bhishma was a Mahajan, because he wasn't careful enough with Maya. So devotees are scared of these things. And Queen Kunti, of course, says, Janmayeshwarya Shutashu Shibir, Edamana Dapuman. She says, these are bewildering things. Aishwarya, opulence, you know, pride in one's birth, or, you know, intelligence, you know, or beauty. These are extremely bewildering things. So therefore, the devotee is very careful not only not to use mystic powers, because he understands mystic powers, which come as a byproduct of bhakti, can be a source of anarthas, as described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Because he says one of the sources of anarthas is bhakti, you know, the byproducts or the result. You know, byproduct means not the actual result of bhakti, but, you know, something that happens at the same time, which is a byproduct. You know. So he understands that. And so he understands that he has to become detached. And not only that does he not use mystic powers, but he voluntarily accepts austerity and not even what to speak of mystic powers and doesn't accept more bodily convenience than is absolutely necessary to keep the body and soul together. And you see that in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he took sannyas. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, he slept on the floor. Because nowadays we have these big four-poster beds and everything like that with silk on the top. You know, I have a four-poster. No, I don't really. But anyway, but he slept on the floor. And when his disciples, devotees like Jagannanda Pandit, wanted to give him like a futon, I mean a cushion on the floor, which is the same thing basically, he said no. And of course, Jagannanda, I was just reading last night Jagannanda Pandit's Prema Vivarta. It was really interesting. Anyone here ever read that? Prema Vivarta. It's a certain perspective on Lord Chaitanya's and his interactions with Lord Chaitanya. People would consider him very eccentric because he was in the mood of Satyabhama, you know, very argumentative with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's interesting, his relationship. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was afraid of aggravating him. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would adjust his activities in many cases just not to aggravate. It's like that. Sometimes when you have someone who gets angry really easily, then you just like adjust some of your activities in front of them. Of course, sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would send him away just so we'd have a little breather. There's Jagannanda Pandit. He tried to give Chaitanya Mahaprabhu a bed, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, people will laugh at me. And finally, Swarup Damodar Goswami was able to take some old cloth and rip some banana leaves or something like that and put them inside the cloth to give a semi type of cushion. Or Jagannanda Pandit tried to give some sandalwood to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said for sannyasi might as well keep a masseur if he's going to accept. A masseur means like a professional massage person. And people will laugh. They smell this perfume on a sannyasi. They think he's a dari sannyasi. He's just keeping ladies. You know, sannyasi wearing perfume. So you see that devotees not only don't accept mystic powers or with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then they actually go out of their way to minimize other things too. And of course, there's the extreme example of Raghunath Das Goswami, who became so renounced, basically eating rice that even the cows wouldn't touch. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very much appreciative of that. And even when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would sit down and eat a meal, he would basically say, just give me the boiled stuff. You know, the rest of the devotees can eat the opulent stuff. Of course, sometimes they forced Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to eat the more opulent stuff, but generally it was like that. He just said, you know, just give me the very simple preparations. So the point I'm making is devotees should be very much careful about this whole Yukta Vairagya thing, because it can, in the name of Yukta Vairagya, like Prabhupada said, in the name of Mahaprasadam, many stalwarts have fallen down. I'm not saying we shouldn't take Mahaprasadam, but like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he was offered Mahaprasadam, he would mix it all together. So it was not to be enamored by the sense of enjoying with the tongue. He would enjoy with his spiritual senses, obviously. Obviously, he's a pure devotee, but he was very, very cautious, showing us an example how devotional service, like Prabhupada said, is a razor's edge. You have to be extremely cautious when dealing with Krishna's material energy. I mean, we've seen so many exalted devotees who've done a lot of service for Prabhupada, and when they got a position, respect, then they started to have spiritual difficulty because of that. I mean, ISKCON history is replete with examples of that. when Prabhupada left the planet, isn't it? And it's not that they weren't sincere or wonderful devotees or very dear to Krishna and all that other nice stuff, but they just weren't careful enough in dealing with the opulences. Like Lord Chaitanya says, Nadanam Najanam, Nasindarim Kavicham Dava Jagadisha Kamaye, Mama Janmani Janmani Shure, Bhavatad Bhakti Hoytaki Jwaye. He's saying, you know, with followers and beautiful people, Nadanam, wealth, it bewilders one. Just like we see, we were just reading the story to Rasapriya the other day about Manigriva and Nalakuvara. They were nice boys. Nothing wrong with them. It just there was so much wealth because their father was Kuvera. And unlimited wealth, Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book. And you see that sometimes when some child inherits a lot of money, sometimes they say the worst thing you can do for your son or daughter is to leave them money and leave them inheritance because they didn't work hard for it, they don't appreciate it, and it just like destroys their life. Or when people win the lottery, I mean, you can do it. There's a study of the people who won different lotteries, because we're not advocating playing the lottery, it's gambling. But their lives become ruined after that. So, you know, this opulence, and also yesterday we were talking about how in America there's so much opulence, and there's more violence in America, I mean, than any other, you know, first world country. I mean, several times more gun violence than any other first world country in the world. And you know, people are blaming it on the guns. You know, it's not the fault of the guns. Of course, you know, the people can, they can pass so many rules about gun control and everything, then people will find how to make bombs from fertilizer. I mean, how can you have to have a license to buy fertilizer for your field? I mean, there's so many ways, or knives, or box cutters, or whatever. So this opulence, when you have too much opulence, it just really bewilders you. And it's better to have less, and the senses will be quieter. So as devotees, we should be very careful in dealing with what Krishna has sent us. And live austerely. Even if Krishna is sending millions and millions of dollars, devotees should be very, very careful about not flaunting their opulence. I mean, even if Krishna sends millions of dollars, it's not that you should be driving around in some big Rolls Royce or something like that. You still use a Honda. That's opulence enough for you. So... anyway, so any questions about this? So anyway, there's so many stories. Prabhupada told the story about Shobari Muni became bewildered because of his mystic powers. So these are all greater personalities than us, and we can easily become bewildered by this material energy, by dealing in this material energy. It's not that we are so devoted or so advanced that we wouldn't become influenced. So you have to be very cautious. Pure devotees are cautious, so why shouldn't you be cautious? So any questions or comments? Yeah.
I have a question about the translation. It says that for those who are completely pure in heart, knowledge is attained by practicing bhakti yoga, which would seem to think, or it would seem to say that you have to be completely pure of heart in order to practice.
No, it doesn't say that. For those who are completely pure in heart, knowledge is attained by the practice of bhakti yoga. It doesn't say... those who are not completely pure won't get any knowledge. I mean, you have to understand the logic behind it. And it doesn't say that you have to be completely pure at heart to practice bhakti yoga. It doesn't really say that if you read the words. Knowledge is attained by the practice of bhakti yoga. You can practice bhakti yoga. Actually, that's what's called devotional service in practice. Because bhakti yoga begins with... Actually, the word practices can mean different things. Let me just, like, unpack this thing for you right now. Practice can mean you're doing it. And practice can mean you're training up to do it. Isn't it? Like that. You know, practice can mean... yeah, it can mean... practice can mean just what you do. This is my daily practice, you can say, in that context. This is my daily practice. It doesn't mean you're learning how to do it, but practice can also mean I'm practicing to become a doctor one day. I'm practicing on dead bodies, not live bodies. No, you don't want to practice on live bodies. That'll be a disaster. You know, where's the kidneys? Oh, no, that was the heart. Or I practice on, when I was young, I practiced medical things on a visible man. You know, it was a plastic man, so I practiced. But you say when a doctor is doing his practice, but hopefully he's not just practicing. You understand the difference? Then we go to the doctor, I said, are you just practicing on me? Sometimes they are. Dentists are.